I'm the Director of Strategic Partnerships here. Thank you for joining us today on our webinar about Tiger and Fastlane, an inside look at new opportunity. Today we'll be doing a number of things, but at first I wanted to just let you know we are in fact recording this presentation and we'll be able to release it to you after the presentation is concluded, should you want to refer back to it or the slides for any notes you may need. We'll also have contact information at the end of the presentation should you need to reach out to myself, to Beth Osborne, to Michael Rodriguez, all of whom are speaking this afternoon on this presentation. Additionally, because we have a large number of registrants and participants today, we will most likely only be able to get to one or two or three questions at the end. Though if you do want to type your question into the chat box, we'll be sure to circle back around with you and make sure your question gets answered afterward to the best that we are able to. So again, please feel free, write your question down, put it in the chat box, so that we can then come back to it, potentially get to it at the end of the presentation. But that's really all the housekeeping information for this presentation today. Again, today's webinar with Transportation for America is Tiger and Fastlane, the two discretionary grant programs that communities are eligible for post-MAP 21 world in the new authorization. So again, my name is Erica Young. I'm the Director of Strategic Partnerships. I'm actually, for those of you who know me, transitioning from Transportation for America to Smart Growth America, where I'm going to be doing a lot more of this kind of work, which are expanding really the adoption of our mission-driven smart growth solutions across all programs, be it our developer program locus or Transportation for America with our transportation solutions, or through the Local Leaders Council, for the local elected and appointed officials on smart growth solutions. Fundamentally, what Smart Growth America is doing more of that you'll also be hearing about is expanding into creating solutions and opportunities for communities who are facing these pressing growth and development and transportation challenges. So that's really something we're excited about. We're glad that you guys are on the webinar today to hear about this, not just what we're moving into. You know, obviously over the last, last decade or so, we've been working very, very hard with a lot of your help to disseminate these great new ideas, these great smart growth ideas, whether it's complete streets or better returns on investment studies or things like that, safer streets, everything that we've been putting out there. But now we're in that great new world where we can actually work directly with you and try to implement a lot of these ideas. So very excited about that. And really what we're going to be doing today, I mentioned that Smart Growth America is launching that Transportation for America Technical Assistance Program. It's what our senior policy advisor, Beth Osborne, works under. In addition, Michael Rodriguez, whom we'll mention here in a moment. We're going to be talking about how Transportation for America and T4A Technical Assistance has supported and promoted Tiger as well. We're going to be talking about the 2016 Notice of Funding Opportunity. Beth is going to also discuss how we can write a competitive application. Michael, I believe, will be addressing how we handle that benefit cost analysis. You know, one of those questions we hear time and again, how best do I position my project? It's a really great opportunity to talk about that. Also, the new Fastlane program, what's the purpose of this program and really what is USDOT looking for? And then at the end, you know, how can T4A help you? How can our technical assistance program help you between questions and next steps and things of that nature? Next slide. So as I mentioned, we are launching the new Transportation for America Technical Assistance Program. Next slide. And what that's doing is obviously providing the strategic advice. You can see really all the work that we're going to be focusing on, the way we think we can be the most helpful through grant support, identifying different transportation leaders around the country. We're actually helping a number of communities right now figure out who the best is to really speak on behalf of the different changes in the transit industry and how that's going to impact their development decisions and which options and choices should be available to their community. So working with transportation leaders who can really produce that return on investment for different ways to get to work, different options, different funding and financing measures. Also implementing multimodal design. There's a number of projects we've worked on with various states. You can find a lot of those reports on the Smart Growth America website under DOT Innovation. And many states and localities, as you know, have adopted things like complete streets policies, but we're also actually helping people implement those complete streets policies. So if that's something you're interested in, please, by all means, contact me and we can talk about what we're doing writ large within the organization, but also how a focused solution can help. And then, of course, reports and public speaking. You may have seen the Maryland Transit report we released last year about the cost-benefit analyses for the Purple and Red Lines that we did. We did that in an effort to support a lot of our colleagues in the state of Maryland as they were going through that very difficult decision, very difficult time of trying to adjust to really what a new political reality was in their state. So when we say technical assistance, this is really the type of work that we're talking about and doing. So by all means, let's connect. If you have questions, we can further answer them. Next slide. Also, one of the reasons really that we're in this to talk about it, we're mission-driven, as you know. One of the things that we're really trying to do is make sure the concept and the ideas that we put forth are implemented in a way that we think is consistent with that mission. So that's one of the reasons we're doing it. Obviously, as a nonprofit, the TA program exists to reinvest in those mission-driven parents, and not just find a way to make whatever the most money is possible. We're very committed to sharing our values in that way. But then we also understand how to get things done. We're not just here to talk about what a great idea is. We're really here to talk about how to get it done. So with that, I'll switch into introducing our two speakers today. Beth Osborne, who is, as many of you know, she served as USDOT's Deputy Assistant Secretary and then Acting Assistant Secretary for Transportation Policy prior to coming to Transportation for America and Smart Growth America. Her efforts really focused on implementing MAP 21, developing a new reauthorization proposal, and also managing the TIGER program that we're going to talk about today. Previously, before USDOT, she worked for then-Senator Carper of Delaware, and then also in the House for Representative Klink of Pennsylvania. Also, Michael Rodriguez. He is our, when I say our, I mean Smart Growth America, our Director of Research, and before joining Smart Growth America, he had extensive private sector experience in transportation and economics consulting with various national leading firms. He has expertise in the economics of infrastructure projects and how decisions about infrastructure investments impact these communities and regions. He has written reports on major projects such as the California High-Speed Rail Initiative, pedestrian station access impacts for WMATA, and several successful TIGER grants. So when I say that we have two really very well-qualified speakers, with some really great background and depth of knowledge, I think we both know what I'm talking about now. And with that, I can turn it over to Beth Osborne. Beth, please take it away.
Sure. Thanks for joining the call today. I know that there's a lot of excitement about the TIGER program, and the map that we're showing now is one of the reasons why. It's a program that has funded projects across the country, in many cases, projects that would not have been accomplishable without a program like TIGER. TIGER is an unusual program at the U.S. Department of Transportation because it is so flexible in terms of the sorts of projects it can fund. It's flexible in terms of the project itself. So any surface transportation project other than a channel deepening or a pipeline is fundable through TIGER. And what is particularly interesting is that projects that have multiple elements, different modes in them, are fundable through TIGER. Those who try to build multimodal projects often have challenges in piecing together the funding from siloed programs and other parts of the agency. But the other reason it's incredibly flexible is any governmental entity can apply for it. So whereas the majority of the federal transportation program goes to state DOTs, with some money going to transit agencies and MPOs, this is a program that you can come to if you're a city or a county. And even for many of those agencies that do get a solid amount of money from the program, this is a program they can come to for projects that don't fit neatly within the formula grant program to get some flexibility there. So since 2009, when Tiger was created, there's been $4.6 billion given out, projects with both national and regional or local significance. There's only $500 million available this round, which generally means you're looking at 40 to 45 grants at the end of the day. Applications are due on April 29th, and this year there will be no pre-application process. In some past rounds, there was a process whereby you basically let people know of your interest in applying, and you just gave name, rank, and serial number, but didn't get into the details of your project until a full application. This time, there's nothing to do except to file that full application. As I mentioned, any governmental entity can apply for TIGER, and they can apply to TIGER to get funding for highways, bridges, bike ped, transit, freight rail, passenger rail, intermodal facilities, and ports. There has been a big change in this round of TIGER. Congress lowered the minimum grant for urban areas from $10 million to $5 million. That's a substantial shift. Rural grants still must be a minimum of $1 million. But for urban areas, they have to offer at least a 20% non-federal match. Now, non-federal match means any funding that doesn't come from the federal government. That can be state funding, that can be local funding, that can be private funding. There have been projects in the past that have gotten donations from people who live in the community. Anything that is non-federal. What I would warn folks is if you're getting money from your state DOT, you want to ensure that they're not passing through federal dollars as a non-federal match. That would not count. And one other thing I'll mention about match is while these are minimum amounts to meet statutory eligibility, these are not competitive levels. Most rural grantees offer a significant match. Urban grantees are at least at the 50-50 level. Okay, so the way USDOT chooses a project is not based on mode. It is not based on some of the traditional ways they evaluate projects under the formula grant programs. It's based on the outcomes of the project. So they want to look at whether or not you meet one of their five strategic objectives that's in that they've listed since Secretary LaHood was confirmed as the priorities of the agency. That safety, state of repair, economic competitiveness, quality of life, and environmental sustainability. They are not expecting individual projects to hit it out of the park on all five of these. They're really looking for projects that are strong on two to three of these areas. But they want the overall program to be balanced and cover all five of these areas. So while an individual project might be more focused on safety and state of repair, another project is going to cover economic competitiveness and quality of life. And then the overall program you put together gets you to all the strategic objectives. It is very hard to imagine a project that does exceedingly well in any one of these topics that doesn't capture another one of them on the way. A lot of state of repair projects, for example, improve safety by improving the state of repair. A lot of economic competitiveness projects also improve state of repair. Once a project is deemed to be good in two to three of these areas, the reviewers look also at the secondary criteria. They're starting to look for tiebreakers at that point, and they're looking for partnership and innovation. Partnership can mean any number of things. It can mean that you have a lot of supporters. It means you could have collaboration across multiple jurisdictions. Hopefully means you have a good non-federal match, possibly coming from multiple sources. Innovation can also mean a lot of different things, and really DOT is asking you what is innovative about your project. It could be that you're trying something new that the rest of the country can learn from in terms of the materials you're using or the way you're delivering the project. It could be innovative in how you are putting together all the different travelers. It could be innovative for your area, something your area has never tried before, and only through a program like TIGER are you all ready to pilot it and try it to see if it works and maybe bring it into your overall program. Some other areas that they're going to look at, one thing I want to put a lot of emphasis on
He has Secretary Fox through all the programs he's managing. He's looking for those that are viewing the outcomes in terms of creating ladders of opportunity. This is the concept that the transportation system is supposed to be connecting people with education, jobs, and opportunity that make the economy strong and the country strong. Therefore, he's looking for this to be underlying all of the primary criteria. Therefore, in safety, you want to show that you are managing the safety of all the users, particularly people who maybe can't afford to drive. If you've made the roadway safe for those inside a car with more financial capacity and less safe for the people who are riding their bikes or walking, that is not creating ladders of opportunity. So making sure you talk about how these benefits accrue to all users. Same thing in economic development. This is not just about moving freight or helping business. It's about getting people to work. Same thing in quality of life. They want to make sure that if you're building a good transportation, intermodal connections, you're doing it for everyone. If you're building transit, you're building it for people who want to ride transit and who need to ride transit at the same time. Some other criteria are you need to show a detailed schedule that shows the funds being obligated by June 30th of 2019. That is because on September 30th of 2019, the money expires. And there is no waiver process. There is no process by which the Secretary of Transportation can override this. The money expires. It goes away. And it doesn't matter if it's not your fault, and it doesn't matter if it's if it was a natural disaster. It doesn't matter. The money expires at midnight on September 30th of 2019. So DOT takes the schedule very, very seriously, and they want to have a high level of certainty that they're not going to lose any of their money. Some other things, the benefit-cost ratio should be, you should have more benefit than cost, and I'm going to let Michael cover more details about that, and that you have a strong non-federal match. So at that point, I'm going to lead right over to Michael to talk more about the benefit-cost analysis.
Yeah, hi.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm Michael Rodriguez, and I've worked on a lot of these benefit cost analysis, and while you could take an entire 3-credit course on this, which that's not what we're going to do right now. What I want to do is actually inform you and give you a sense of what your requirements are and what it is that seems to have led to more successful applications, the ones that I've worked on in the past, and what Beth knows the DOT looks for as well. So overall, the most important thing you need to know is that the benefit cost analysis is required. You have to do one for your application. So when you have to do one, the second part is you have to do it, and you have to do it right. And this is very important. The DOT has guidance out there to follow, and that guidance specifies things like what the value of time is and what the value of certain emissions are and how to convert all of that into dollars. You use those values and how to discount back and how to do all of this. That methodology is very important, and there's even prescriptions in there in terms of how to put it, which table should be up front and how to have your summary table up front, little things like that that are often overlooked. And as you read this, if you do this in-house or with a consultant or with us, you want to make sure that that's there, that that's actually something you see up front. And the bottom line of it is the point is that we want to show, and the department wants to know, that the long-term benefits of the project, I see the long-term cost, it seems self-explanatory, but when you're doing a 30-year analysis, and that's usually the point at which makes sense, so that can change if you have a longer life cycle project, but the long-term benefits exceeding long-term costs is very important because it cares very much about the timing of your costs, both capital and operating, and the timing of the benefits. When do those benefits start and when do they accrue? So it's not just that they are there, but how they're distributed over time matters very much, and making sure that the benefit-cost ratio is over 1. This is a very important point, though, that I like to stress is if 2 is better than 1 and 3 is better than 2, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's always better for a benefit-cost analysis. In that this is not a competition to the department to see who can get the highest benefit-cost ratio. it's showing that you do have a benefit cost analysis that demonstrates your benefits exceed the cost in the long run. And in fact, sometimes if the benefit cost analysis gets a little too high, it arises suspicion that can also cause some eyebrows to be raised and to also wonder why you're asking for federal funds if the benefit cost ratio is 37, then you might think about funding it yourself. So in that case, most projects actually fall into a certain zone, and I think that zone is somewhere between 1 and upwards to around 5. So just don't get stressed about what it is. It's important to show that it's over 1 is the point. And with all of these, you're usually going to rely on a travel demand model, but not always. So it's very important because a lot of these benefits accrue from travel time savings, they accrue from changes in travel time, accrue from changes in vehicle miles traveled, and things that happen as a result of that. However, a lot of successful grants were not necessarily fully based on travel demand models or travel time savings. There are other benefits outside of that, like health benefits and some of the other categories that are in there in the 5 strategic goals of the DOT. And if you can find a way to identify those, that's very key in order to do that. That's not necessarily relying on travel time. Now, another part, and this often gets confused, and I like to make the important distinction, is that you could do an economic impact analysis, and that's not required for your application, but it is accepted. And by an economic impact analysis, what that means is often people call that the jobs analysis. How many jobs is this going to create, both from the construction, the operating expenditures, but also the transportation changes of the project will cause economic impacts in your region in and of itself. It's very important that that distinction is made, and one is not the other. And an economic impact analysis is not your benefit cost analysis. And lastly, as you read the guidance on this point, there's a lot of things that are economic impacts that are very much not benefits. Things like job creation is actually not a benefit in the terms of benefit cost analysis. It's a benefit in terms of it is good, but it's not a benefit in the formal definition in economics. So you have these benefits that come from the short term, from the long term jobs and changes in transportation, and they generally rely on what's known as input-output methodology, where one change in one area of the economy reverberates throughout and it generates. There's ways to do this, and there's a lot of software packages out there, Tredis, Prism, Remy. I've worked on and with some of these, and as well as several others, so it's not just to plug these. There's a whole host of these throughout the world that you could go for. And the important thing is that this is also, if you do this, though, it's done correctly and it can stand by and have a proper justification as to what it is. It usually supports your benefit cost analysis and helps to further your application and especially bolster the idea of economic competitiveness of your project, especially if that's the angle.
Great. Thank you. So I want to reemphasize, I think Michael made a really good point, and sometimes people don't hear this point, but it's something really essential that you remember with your cost-benefit analysis. The point is to show that the long-term benefits outweigh the long-term costs. To put a finer point on it, no one wins in Tiger because your BCA showed a ratio of 37 and someone else showed a ratio of 25. You have to get past a threshold of 1. You have to show that your benefits outweigh your costs. And so it's a threshold issue, just like showing that you have a schedule that is going to get the funding obligated in time. These projects will not be rated on who has the best BCA. Now we're going to move into a discussion of FastLane grants. This is a new program. And as someone who was there when USDOT started Tiger, what we knew going into the first round and what we knew coming out were two totally different things. So DOT and folks are going to give you their best understanding of what they're looking for in FastLane, but they'll be able to tell you with much greater certainty in the second round once they've gotten used to the sorts of projects they see and how things go when they apply their criteria. This was authorized in the FAST Act, which was signed into law in early December of last year. And it provides $800 million each year through a competitive process. Applications for this are due sooner, April 14th, and eligible applicants are states, MPOs, local governments, tribes, federal land management agencies. The federal share on these funds are 60%, but you can go up to 80% in federal funds. That means you can use other federal funds to match the Fastlane funds, but you can only seek 60% of your project funds from Fastlane itself. I will say that just like Tiger, my guess is they will get significantly more applications than they have money to give out, and therefore those that can beat these numbers and have more non-federal dollars than federal dollars in it are going to compete better. Also, 25% of the funding is reserved for rural areas, and there's a limit in Tiger and Fastlane to 3 applications per lead applicant. There are 2 different discussions in the Notice of Funding Opportunity. There is an evaluation for large grants. That is a grant of at least $25 million, and that is available to projects that are a total of $100 million or 30% of the state's FY 2015 federal aid apportionment, whichever is less. And I recommend that you look that up online if you don't know what your state's apportionment is. But obviously in a state like California, it's going to be way larger than $100 million. In a state like Maine, it's going to be much smaller. There is a percentage of funding, 10%, reserved for projects that don't meet the large grant criteria, that those projects can seek as little as $5 million. Moving on, eligible projects are, this is a limited program. This is a highway program for the most part with a focus on freight. So you can look through the eligible projects here and get a sense of what they're looking for. It's highway freight projects that are on the National Highway Freight Network, and I have a link at the bottom of the page so you can see what is on the National Highway Freight Network. Highway bridge projects on the interstate or national highway system, highway grade rail grade crossing separations. There is intermodal rail port sorts of projects. There are 2 things to know about this. One is that you must directly show that it will benefit freight movements on the National Highway Freight Network and that the overall amount of money that is available for those type of projects is limited over the life of the program to $500 million. Theoretically, this secretary could choose to spend all of it in this round and give $500 million out to intermodal projects and $300 million out to highway programs. I find that to be highly unlikely that he would spend down the next 4 years' worth of intermodal flex money. The legal criteria for large grants, they're looking for projects that generate national benefits in economics, mobility, and safety. They want a project that is deemed to be cost-effective. It should contribute to the national goals that are laid out in Section 150 of Title 23. They want something that's based on preliminary engineering. So if you haven't started to plan and engineer your project, it's not going to be able to come into this. Has a stable funding source. Is unlikely to be completed without federal funds and is expected to begin construction within 18 months of obligation. Now, that is a lot more flexible than Tiger. Tiger has a date for obligation. This is more about once you've obligated that you're going to move on quickly to construction. In terms of the cost effectiveness evaluation, DOT must not have felt like they could require applicants to do a BCA, but they say several times in the Notice of Funding Opportunity that they strongly urge applicants to express cost effectiveness through the use of a benefit cost analysis. This will be considered for small projects, but it will be a criterion for large projects. When an agency strongly urges you to do something in order to get their money, I recommend that you do it and take that as a requirement. They do say that there are benefits that they suggest that you monetize that are we have a lot of familiarity with monetizing. They also list a group of benefits other benefits that might be harder to monetize that they still want you to discuss and explain, even if it doesn't go directly into the calculation of the benefit cost analysis. Moving on, they're also going to look, so the criteria I mentioned before is what's in the law. DOT has added some merit criteria as well for both large and small grants. They want specifically to see projects that improve the reliability and efficiency of the national and regional transportation system. They want a project that improves movement of goods and people through better repair, resiliency, and less congestion. And they want projects that mitigate the impact on communities and the environment surrounding the project. And they put an emphasis on that last part. So projects that seem to divide communities or cause a big environmental or noise impact or safety impact on the neighborhoods adjacent are not going to do well in this program. Some other criteria that they mention, again, partnership and innovation and dose surprise cost share. So in terms of both programs, I just have a few more tips that I want to mention to folks. It's good to keep in mind. Don't think about these programs as a way necessarily to take care of your top priority. Instead, look at these offerings and ask which of your top 10 priorities best fit in there. And even if these programs are only well designed to take care of your fourth and fifth most important priorities, they're giving you the opportunity to fund your top priorities. I've seen a lot of applicants come in and say, you should fund this because this is our top priority. That is not what DOT is asking for. They are asking for what you're doing in your region that fits their desires to fund. And they've listed out here pretty clearly what it is they want to fund. So look for a good match. When you're writing your application, it doesn't have to be flowery. It doesn't have to be glossy. It has to be clear. Think about the poor staffers that are going to spend the next 2 months of their lives doing nothing but reading about projects from across the country in places they've never been to, and recognize that that's the first line of defense, and you have to get through them. And if you're going to get through them, you're going to make them familiar with your community. You're going to provide lots of pictures and maps and graphs so that they understand, even if they've never stepped foot in your community, what you're facing, what you're trying to do, and they can then talk about your project as if they have some familiarity with it. Another thing is in the review process, if a project does well at some point, the headquarters staff are going to call up the regional and division staff for federal highways, federal transit, or federal railroads, and ask them about the project. They're going to ask about the schedule. They're going to ask if there are any red flags. It's generally not good for those folks who have never heard of your project, that especially if there are any concerns in headquarters about your schedule. What you want is the regional staff to say, yes, I know this grantee, I know this project, and I have confidence in their schedule and their ability to deliver it. Another thing I want to mention is a lot of people will ask about demonstrating support and how best to do that. You definitely want to have support from your civic leaders, your political leaders, your congressional delegation. That support is not going to take a project that was poorly reviewed and put it in a finalist group. But what it can do is take a project from the finalist list and elevate it to the award list. Because once you're trying to break ties, the project that has a unified group of support from the folks in the community and the elected officials, that is a really good tiebreaker. And especially if the congressional delegation is united behind a particular project, because frankly, the congressional delegation are the funders of this program, and USDOT is always happy to use that, making their funders happy, as a tiebreaker. The last thing I'm going to mention is if you have not registered for grants.gov, as soon as you hang up on this webinar, you need to start that process. You need to confirm that you have an active registration with grants.gov right now, especially if you're applying for Fastlane. This process is not easy, and it's not something you can do last minute, and I consider 2 weeks last minute. there are numbers, the DUNS number and various pieces of information that you may need to go get or find. You need to apply. You need to get a response from them. There's nothing that can speed that process up. Please, please, please do not leave that for the last minute. If they were slow in responding and setting up your account, that is not an excuse for not making the deadline. So be very, very careful with that. And the last thing I will mention is if there's anything that we can do to support you in the development of your application, we would love to help. I find that it is the projects that are have an author in the agency applying is a very positive thing. We can certainly do some help there in writing and in reviewing, but it's something that you want your own staff involved in. And we can also just talk through some of the ideas you might have and how to express it in the most compelling way possible. Time is running short, though, so if this is something that you're interested in, please let us know as soon as possible. Also, please be aware that because we are a nonprofit, we can only work with those who are putting forth applications that support our mission. So if you give us a call, you can evaluate us. We'll have to evaluate you a little bit, and we'll see if there's a good pairing. And from there, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thanks, Beth. Again, this is Erica Young. We will, in fact, be sending out the slide deck for this presentation. We are also recording this webinar, and we'll be able to send it out to everyone who registered for today's webinar. I know there are a handful of questions that have come through that have been really really great. Beth, I will say one of the ones I caught was a question about the eligibilities for the Fastlane project. There was a participant who asked about what you could use it for and specifically asked about the non-motorized side. So if you could address whether or not non-motorized projects are eligible for Fastlane, I think that would be helpful.
So Fastlane is a project, it's a highway program and a freight program. And I think that if you are benefiting projects that are on the National Highway Freight Network and there's a non-motorized component to it, that would probably be fundable as part of a broader project to help move trucks and freight. But I struggle to think of a non-motorized project that would do well in this program because it has to show benefit to freight movements on the National Highway Freight Network. And that would be a difficult thing to show in a really strong way without the other roadway components to that project.
Great, thanks. We also have another question about, I believe it was Fastlane, as it relates to smaller metropolitan regions. There were a couple of questions about the population threshold to be able to apply for that particular grant program. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you have to at least be an MPO of 200,000 people or above. But that was Minoko?
One
of the direct questions.
I believe any MPO can apply. They are not looking at your eligibility based on the size of your local community. All of the eligibility rules apply to your state. This was a program initially designed with states in mind, and while others were added as a eligible applicant, it reads very much like a state program. Mm-hmm. So if you're a tiny community in California, the eligibility rules still apply as from California. So you have to have a very large project, and you're put in the large project pot for the most part. So you're looking at a project of $100 million minimum or for a smaller state. Even if you're a large metropolitan area in a smaller state, if your state receives a very small amount of money on an annual basis from federal highways, then your threshold will be lower.
We've also had a question about whether or not you can apply for, if you would be competitive applying for a tire grant for a project that has already begun.
No. I think that would be a problem. And any money you've already spent cannot be used as match. It's only spending going forward. There's a bunch of it depends on the question. I'd like to know more about the project to answer it better. For example, if you did phase one and you're looking for money for phase two, In DOT's mind, those are two different projects for the most part. So maybe you can talk about what you've done in phase one and ask DOT to partner with you on phase two. If you are underway on a project, DOT is generally going to assume you have funding to finish that project, and that means you're displacing other funds with Tiger funds. That is not competitive. They are really looking for projects that aren't going to be built at all without Tiger.
If I could add to that, too, to stress on this whole idea of a project that has separate phases, a very key thing about a project is what's called independent utility. And your project has to demonstrate that it has its own benefits and stands alone on its own without another phase, depending on another phase. This isn't just for benefit cost analysis. This is for the whole narrative and the application, how it makes sense. So if phase two thoroughly depended on phase one to exist, you need to show that phase two has benefits that had nothing to do with phase one or that are above and beyond. So you're not both taking the costs from phase one and also that you're not ascribing benefits to your project that really were coming from phase one. So this is a new project, and so it has to have independent utility. You could Google that term.
I'll let me give you an example. So in a lot of highway projects, a state might grade the project as phase one, and then they'll come in and pave it in segments. And those segments, as they're building out, it's based on when money's coming in through the formula. It might not be drivable. The road might just end until they get enough money to bring it to the next intersection. That will not work in Tiger. In Tiger, you have to build a road that connects one road to another road. You have to build a transit system that someone would actually get on and ride to from an origin to a destination. So that independent utility matters a lot. And while you might have a phase that you're going to build a road from road A to road B, and then phase two is from B to C, that's fine. Both have to be of independent utility in the Tiger world.
Great. Thanks, Beth. There's another question that I am actually going to take moderator privilege and turn into two. So one of the questions is, how is rural defined? Whose definitions apply? And the second part of the question that I'm going to add into it, Michael, is for you. When people are doing benefit-cost analysis, have you seen examples from more rural regions that you would consider to be stellar or exemplary? And if so, can you speak to what you thought it was that made it so good? Beth, if you want to go first about rural definitions.
Sure. In the Tiger program, rural is defined as any area that is not within a Census Bureau designated urbanized area. So basically, you're either in an urbanized area or you are rural. That's a very, very broad definition. In the Fast Lane program, they have a different definition. It's a little more, it's based on the density of your community. And what I will do is I will send the language out to folks after this presentation to give you a little more specificity. What I would generally suggest to folks is if you're not sure if your area is considered rural, just call DOT because what you want them and have them respond to you by email because you want it in writing if for some reason later on they change their mind. You want them to show that they guided you that it's rural.
Great. Another question, actually, before I move on, Michael, about BCA and rural areas.
The rural grants that I've areas that I've seen often have actually were freight related.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been part of anyone, so I don't know specifically about the roadway network or transit for rural areas. The concepts would be the same, but one key component for rural areas that often comes across is freight. And those ones really demonstrate that the additional freight access improves the regional economy and improves the national economy, actually. It's very important. You can't steal from one region to benefit your region. It improves the national economy. There was a winner that I worked on that was the Pataca and Louisville Railroad. This was in Kentucky. And they had a whole project of improving a bridge, a freight railroad bridge, and this bridge really severely needed the repair. Without it, a lot of the trucks would be diverted into the rural communities, and so the story was very much about avoiding truck movements as well as improving the local economy, because the shippers could be more productive if they could use this line as opposed to having it to use. So there's a whole area, a whole kind of sub-methodology or ways to look at benefit cost analysis that's very particular to freight as well. And those projects are very possible, and there have been several successful projects that were freight related.
We have a multi-pronged question regarding how the various parts of TIGER, the various criteria, are weighted. And I think it's really important for those of you that might have familiarity with other federal programs that there's no scoring. There's no numeric scoring in TIGER the way there is, nor will there be in FastLane, the way that there are at other agencies. Each area, each of the five primary criteria are weighted equally. And the goal is to get a highly recommended rating in 2 to 3 of them. It's great to get a highly recommended, or in the various ratings are highly recommended, recommended, acceptable, and not recommended. You don't want to be not recommended in anything, but you want to be highly recommended in 2 to 3. There is no priority put on any one over the other. They will have a whole bunch of projects that do well in different categories, and at the end, they like to have a good array of projects that, when put together, they benefit all five. The same thing can really be said about all of the various criteria. Once you move into the secondary criteria, the schedule, the match, these are tiebreakers, and it just kind of matters who has been elevated at that point. There might be a year where there's a lot of folks that come in putting up really good cost shares, and another year where they're not putting up as good cost shares, maybe because of economic issues. I will say, in terms of cost share, they do look at your community. There's a sensitivity to the fact that, for example, when tribes come in with a 20% match, that's a very, very high and impressive match for a tribe which doesn't have a lot of resources from various other programs. And so, you know, an area like that that comes in with a 20% match is going to be viewed much more favorably than a wealthy community that comes in with the same match. So DOT is understanding of the circumstances of communities, but basically they want to see that that area is putting as much as they can forward in partnership.
So we're close to out of time, but I did want to say we have had a couple of questions about how you can engage with us on your particular project, and also if there's time enough to still start and submit a project in this process this year for funding, especially if you haven't started it already. So as you can see on the screen, there's various ways that we can work with your municipality, with your chamber, with your county, with whomever it is that's participating here. Though I would say that timing is of the essence. It is getting, we are able to write TIGER applications, absolutely, and that is a fee-for-service technical assistance offering. It is something, if you're interested in having us write your TIGER application for you and run it soup to nuts, we are rapidly running out of time, so I would highly encourage you to reach out to us today after the webinar and get on a call to talk about this. If it is something that you haven't started yet and are still interested in, I would not say that's insurmountable, but again, that would be something you would absolutely have to start on really today. Make sure that you're in grants.gov. Start going through that RFP, things like that. Sorry, the NOFO, excuse me. Heaven forbid I get the acronym wrong. But really just to get on top of it starting today. If it's something that, you know, if you're already a Transportation for America member, if your organization is already a member, we can get you on a call with Beth for a short conversation just to vet your idea with Beth, with Michael, whoever it is here. If you're not a member, obviously, we're happy to have that conversation with you and talk about ways that we might be able to support your effort. But really, let me see if you can come to the next one. If you do have follow-up questions, you can reach any of us here. I'm happy to talk to you. and really get you to the right person. So feel free to reach out to me directly, and we can triage and coordinate the questions that you have. There are a number of questions that we haven't been able to get to today, but it is something that we'll follow up with you guys directly on. We'll comb through them after we're done with the webinar here and work on getting those answers while we are also getting the recording and the PowerPoint out to you. And really, a number of resources, I think, that are online that you can go to directly. One on Transportation for America's own webpage under Maps and Tools. There is a page for all the TIGER grants that have been awarded. It's in a very easy-to-understand graphic format of a map, and you really just click on each pinpoint. It tells you which round it was, who was the applicant, and what the information is about, how much was awarded. So you can see, especially if there's been awards in your state previously, that's one of the ways it's really great to work with. Also, USDOT has their TIGER webpage where you can request different types and kinds of TIGER applications, which are helpful to find if, you know, you want to find out if there's this, you know, what are all the applications that were awarded or even not awarded but applied for, because it is public information, so there is a Freedom of Information Act ability that you have with that. You can find out through their website and everything like that. So there are some really great resources out there, whether it's C4A, whether it's USDOT, but that is really great. I think to that end, we'll answer one more question. Where are we? One question. So FAFSA grants aren't specific about where they want the merit criteria to be addressed in the narrative. Thoughts on where to put them? It's a great question. Almost a stumper. We'll see if you can stump the expert here.
Yeah, that is a good question. And I don't know that even USDOT knows the answer to that quite yet. What I generally find useful in terms of being a reader of these applications is that you quickly up front establish that you've met the statutory criteria, but you don't spend a lot of time on that. And you move into the substantive criteria, for example, FastLane, afterward, the merit criteria, and describe that later. But it's very difficult from a reader's perspective to spend a lot of time on some of those merit issues when you're not sure if this is even an eligible project. And if you're worried about that, that worry plagues you as an evaluator until it's confirmed, and it can interfere with their appreciation of how well your project does in the merit criteria. So I'd start by making sure that you have made clear upfront that all the statutory criteria is met in this project, and then get into the discussion about not only is my project eligible, but it shines in terms of what you're trying to get in outcomes.
Fantastic. So any final words that you'd like to impart to the audience?
No, I think those are great questions. If folks have additional questions, feel free to let us know and reach out, and we'd be happy to help any way we can.
Perfect. Well, thank you again, everyone, for joining us today. It's been really fantastic. Thank you for all these really great questions that, especially on a new project like FastLane, are quite thought-provoking. We will, again, follow up with those questions we weren't able to get to on the webinar today. But with that, we hope that you go forth, find some really great projects, and get really excited about applying for these programs. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great day.